waiting to listen and to speak and waiting very patiently is Angus McNeill from the SNP. Do you think it's a good deal for the union?
No, clearly not a good deal for the union. I mean, there's 100 million of Scottish taxes going into this. So not only do we not get the uplift of spend, we are actually contributing to this. It'll be really an addition on the UK national debt that we'll be liable for. So it's a very bad deal, and it's a deal that, if however united the United Kingdom was yesterday, it's a lot less united today as Scottish people wake up and realise that they've been had, and they've been had big style.
You must welcome this, then. This makes your case for nationalism, doesn't it?
It's making a case for independence, absolutely. Say exactly what we say it is, what the UK is. The UK cannot in any way hold its head up and say that this is a fair and decent deal. And the more they say it's a fair and decent deal, the more unfair and the more indecent the proposition becomes. They actually torpedo themselves by defending the deal. Either way, it's a lose-lose. You know, and people are pointing out all over Twitter and what have you. A couple of the jokes are house prices are up in London. A woman has paid £1 billion to stay in a flat in Downing Street. Or the more serious point, Grenfell Tower gets £5 million. And Northern Ireland gets £1,000 million. So there's a lot of resentment in corners of the UK, but there's also a huge feeling of unfairness. And it is a grubby deal. It's a grubby deal to keep the Tories in power. It's nothing to do with Brexit, as I said there. It's the Tories' understanding of power. And we also see the incompetence or the impotence of the 13 Tory MPs that Scotland sends south, who get nothing at all.
There you go, Nelson. You hear Angus saying it. You're making his argument for him for independence.
Thank you, Nelson.
Well, his argument for independence has rather fallen its face over the last while. The fact that the SNP...
It's reinvigorated, is what he's saying.
It's reinvigorated.
Hold on. If you would...
Very kind of you. It's a £1 billion shot in the arm for independence.
Have you finished?
Well, I guess a lot more I can say, but I am grateful, Nelson.
Come on, Nelson, you go.
Thank you. The case of the situation is simply this. That no matter what was said, no matter what was done, the SNP hates the union, the SNP hates the Conservative Party, and there is no doubt that he will try to make all sorts of issues out of it to cover up the fact that the SNP was given a bloody nose by the people of Scotland in the Westminster election.
SNP combined, when you put the Labour, Tory and Liberal seats together, still don't have as many as the SNP. And I wouldn't say the SNP hates the union. The SNP don't go around hating things. What the SNP want is a progressive, normal Scotland that's more like Norway, more like Denmark, more like Iceland, more like progressive nations, not something that's stuck in the politics of the past, but something very much looking forward to the politics of the future.
Well, actually, one could equally argue that the SNP is simply a relic of old 19th century nationalism. There are all sorts of things that can be thrown about. Sorry, you're actually, once again, I'm trying to speak, you interrupt. The fact of the matter is...
Don't make assertions over the SNP.
All around, we make jibes in all sorts of directions. And I can make jibe at the SNP.
I'm not making jibes at you.
Like a 19th century nationalism. We do all sorts of things. But the truth of the matter is that from the point of view of the United Kingdom, to get a stable position going into negotiations, this was the best outcome. Could I also say this, that there's a record of parties in government at Westminster making deals with other parties. You look at all the deals that were done by the Labour Party.
Can I ask a simple question here? As a unionist, would Nelson not much prefer to see the fairness of Wales getting its £1 billion, £2 billion, and Scotland getting its £3 billion, the rest of England getting its £30 billion, or is it I'm all right, Jack, as far as a Northern Ireland unionist is concerned?
No, but I think that it's important to remember that Northern Ireland, and the point was made very strongly by Arlene Foster, that if we are to address the legacies of the Troubles, and if we are to deal with the underinvestment in Northern Ireland, when money was being diverted away from investment and infrastructure and other things in order to deal with the effects of the economic terrorist war that we had, the blowing up of factories and businesses year on year on year, all of the damage that was done, the bridges that were blown, all the things that were done. It is going to take investment to reshape Northern Ireland because over the last while, There is a question about how long
we continue to make that argument, though, or how long we can continue to make that argument. Business and economics editor John Campbell is sitting here with me now. We're having this long debate here about whether we're entitled to all of this money and whether the Scots and the Welsh should be entitled to this cash as well. Does Northern Ireland still have this special argument, this special case?
I suppose there is a plausible case to be made, the one that Nilsson makes, to say that we have an infrastructure deficit. You just need to say, look at our motorway system, say, compared to the Republic of Ireland's, where ours, frankly, isn't as good. And yes, throughout the years of the Troubles, most of the capital spending was poured into security. And you could argue that the failings of the political parties from the Good Friday Agreement era was not to try and chisel a load of money out of the government at that stage. And so, really, ever since the Good Friday Agreement, the parties have kind of maybe realised their error and have since been trying to get money, but never quite managing to get very much.
You've heard the argument, though, from the Scots and the Welsh already about how much they should be entitled to. Angus McNeill's been making the point just there now. I mean, ultimately, are they not entitled to extra cash as well? If this is going to be an end of austerity, should it not be the end of austerity everywhere?
Well, entitled's a strong word. Let's leave the economics aside. This is politics. The DUP have done a deal here. These deals happen in countries all over the world when they're coalition governments. Look at the Republic, where you know the likes of say Jackie Healy Ray from County Kerry. It's pure clientelism. You know, you give us the money to fix the road and all the rest of it, and then we'll back the government. You also have to look at, say, some of the stuff, the work the Financial Times did during the coalition era, where Danny Alexander's constituency in the north of Scotland seemed to get all these bits of policy which just magically seemed to help him. For example, there was a tax break for ski lifts, and his was about the only constituency in the whole of the UK which benefited from that. So I don't think we should be in this kind of... There's a bit of pearl clutching going on among some of the other parties. Deals get done in politics.
So basically, Angus McNeill, you backed the wrong horse. The reality is, if Jeremy Corbyn had needed a party to do a deal with, you could have been in an influential position.
Well, I would imagine if we were in an influential position, we'd want to be in an influential position of fairness and not the Jack.
You wouldn't have pushed for a deal for Scotland.
No, what we would
as,
have
as a nationalist is, party, you wouldn't have pushed for a deal for Scotland. I don't believe that for a second.
Well, you might or might not believe it. That doesn't matter. What matters is we would have looked to end austerity across the UK, which is damaging the UK. Now, anybody who looks at Iceland and or the Republic of Ireland, who had bad crashes and are now booming, should see that the politics of George Osborne has been very bad, continued by Philip Hammond. And a lot of people are suffering because of that. So, yes, we want to see people in Scotland having better lives, but we also want to see people in England, Wales, Northern Ireland having better lives as well. You know, and the people in America are losing their health through Trump care and the abandoning of Obamacare. That doesn't please me at all. So I don't particularly feel happy in a world where I'm doing well and other people aren't. That seems to be all right Jackism of Northern Ireland. But I think that the medium to longer term is they're undoing the very union that they've so loudly proclaimed, because they think they're doing okay, or they think they've got won over somebody in the short term. And, you know, I heard your correspondent there comparing things with Republic of Ireland. Republic of Ireland is an independent country. The thing that should be compared with infrastructure is the road up Loch Lomond side, which is very slow. The road south of Fort William, the A95 running between Aviemore up Elgin direction. There's huge infrastructure issues in Scotland as well, all because of the chosen austerity of the Eton boys. And this is what people have to remember when they're proclaiming a union. They're letting upper-class toffs in England decide the social priorities and the infrastructure priorities in Scotland and Northern Ireland, all because of loony politics of the past, time we moved on to the future, and cared for people round about us, not just ourselves.